Hello, everyone. In today's episode, we handle some frequently asked questions from members, viewers, and listeners. Please enjoy.
Welcome to the Perfect Workout Podcast, where fitness meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of the Perfect Workout. I'm joined by Jim Keen, our Director of Training. We hope you enjoy today's episode.
Welcome back, everybody. In today's episode, we're going to go over some Q&A. Common questions, and we got some answers here for you. So we're just going to take these as they come here, right? So we'll tee up the first one.
Yep.
So the first question we have, and that we get quite often, is what about ab workouts? Should I be working the abs? Is it important to work the core? We've got members that include those in their exercises, which is fantastic. And I think we've got members that wouldn't necessarily include them if they felt like they didn't have to.
Sure.
So let's talk about abs.
If you're doing direct ab work because you think you have to, you're most likely a little bit misguided, because there are some people who suppose that if you do direct ab work, if you contract your abs against resistance on purpose and target that area, there's some people who imagine that that will produce a pleasing visual aesthetic picture of their midsection. And the reason that's not true is because we all have abs. You have abs, I have abs, everyone you see has abs. They have a rectus abdominis, and it's the front part of your abdomen. Everyone has it, with no exceptions. And so the reason you can't see everybody's abs is because you have this substance on top of it called fat. And you got fat on top of your abs, and this obscures the look of the abs. So when you do direct work, some people, again, hallucinate this idea that I can do nothing with this fat, but I can access the muscle underneath, and somehow it'll worm its way up, and the muscle will be on top. I'm not sure what the thinking is, but they suppose that that would be aesthetically pleasing. What actually ends up happening is that when you stimulate a muscle, it grows, and the abs can't get big like chest or biceps, but it grows, and so they just get thicker.
Mm-hmm.
They get larger in their midsection, which is the opposite of what they want. But they think, I need to work my abs to see my abs. And of course, that's not true. But by working their abs, they thicken up their midsection. So their pants don't fit as well. And they don't have the taper silhouette, you know, from the shoulders down to the waist, because it's boxy, right? Because they built out their abs in a misguided attempt to see their abs. And so what they actually want, because they already have abs, as we talked about, what they actually want is visible abs. Mm. And that is built in the kitchen. It's 98% due to what you're eating and your lifestyle and how you're sleeping and your choices you're making outside of the workout. So that said, from our perspective, we only have a limited time and we only have a limited number of movements. And so we want the largest amount total of muscle mass in the fewest number of movements. And so if you think about the chest and the back and the arms and your calves and your legs, and then the abs. Abs is this tiny, it's a small muscle group. It's thin, and it's about this big, and it's thin. And even the obliques, if you add those in as a weight, it's a very small. Why would I waste a movement on this small nothing? It's low leverage, it's low priority, especially because the abs are used and stimulated in the pull down, in the chest press, in the row. The abs are working. The abs are stimulated. Walking around every day, the abs are working constantly. So you actually don't need direct work for the abs, and it's counterproductive in some cases when the aesthetics are the priority.
Yeah.
What you need is to get rid of the fat on top of the abs to reveal the abs. You're going to think that looks good, I promise. Now, if you're a martial artist or a gymnast or an athlete of some kind or a dancer, yeah, you need your abs to be strong, and you should do direct work for your abs to make them strong for your sport or your activity. But for aesthetic reasons, there's no good reason to be doing abs directly, which costs you the opportunity to be doing a more productive movement that would have a greater systemic effect and a greater effect on your body scans that would show you muscle versus fat. There's not a lot of muscle you can gain in the abs, but that same amount of time spent somewhere else would be much more productive. So,
and you can find some cool stories about this. Like, there's plenty of stuff online, people that will show, hey, you know, this abs are made in the kitchen. I'm going to go 6 months and I'm going to focus only on abs. And then, you know, I'm going to go another 6 months. I'm not going to touch abs or strength train at all my abs, but I'm going to focus on the kitchen. And of course, the outcome is always beautiful, visible abs because right. they focus on diet and nutrition. So it's great. One of the things people are looking for, and one of the key things people are looking for, is the aesthetics. I think one of the other things that they're looking for that you've mentioned already is, you know, in our society, it's really important, this idea around core. Like, if my core is strong, that is sort of above everything else. And so, yes, with specificity, if you're doing something like gymnastics, you might want to focus even more so on sort of extra strength there. But for the average person, you're not missing your abs. You're not missing a foundational body of strength.
Right.
You know, the kinetic chain here is working great whenever you're doing these other big movements. So
right.
I guess it's safe to say that if you want to really make sure that you have a strong core, which, you know, is kind of a funny word. A lot of people say, great, show me, you know, in the kinesiology books, anatomy and physiology, just point to the core muscle.
Right. Yeah, it's like point to the stabilizer muscle.
Yeah.
Point to that, would you?
And it, yeah, there's not a core muscle.
Yeah.
What they're really talking about is their abs and making sure that they're strong enough to do life. Yeah. And we've talked about this in prior episodes. The answer is absolutely. So that comes with just strength training. So our recommendation for our members, if you want to do the abdominal exercises, we have machines and exercises for that. Great. If you want to do that because you want more aesthetically appealing abs.
Yep.
We're going to focus on our Peak Well program and nutrition and diet to really bring the body fat percentage down so those abs begin to reveal themselves more. If you want to focus on abdominal workouts because you just want to make sure you're not missing that, then you don't have to do an ab specific exercise. In fact, it would be better for you to do that leg press, to do that chest press, etc., because not only are you going to be engaging that core and those abs, but you're also going to be building up even larger muscles with the time that you have.
Right. And then your silhouette, because you're looking for aesthetics. So the time could be spent building bigger shoulders and lats for the V-taper and leaving the waist very small, which is how you want it. So you don't want to do direct work and make more dense and bigger the part that you want small. It's opposite. So to your point, yeah, work the legs, work the shoulders, work the lats, work large muscle groups, and the abs will come along for the ride so long as you're executing on your lifestyle side outside of the studio. So to build the abs, you don't need to. They're already there.
There you go.
To reveal the abs, you need to live a lifestyle and a diet and sleep and all that stuff that's conducive to people seeing
you. You got some tools for that?
Yeah. Well, you have abs right now, so there's no need to.
That's good to know. I was worried. Yeah.
I was worried. Yeah, I was just going to be jelly. It'll slouch over.
That brings us to question number two, and I think we'll have to do a two-part answer on this one as well, but for our different studios. So I want you to get specific if you can on the Nautilus Studios and then on the Fast Fit Machine Studios. And this is going into legs. So a lot of people want to build abs. A lot of people want to, you know, accomplish many different things across body composition. But as common, I think, as abs are glutes, especially with our female members. You know, this is no secret. How do I get nice, firm, round booties, right? And the reason that I think this is important to bring up is not because it's a common question for our members, but if you turn on a TV at night and you get an infomercial, 9 times out of 10, there's going to be some device that is the new found secret to shape the booty, right?
Brazilian butt blaster.
That's right.
2 a.m. So on QVC. Yeah, yeah.
What, when it comes to achieving that outcome, if you're in a Nautilus studio, how's that accomplished? If you're in a Fast Fit studio, how's it accomplished? And are any of these extra specific things, and you can get into a few that you're aware of, necessary outside of the things that we have?
So if you're in a flagship studio that has Nautilus machines, you will typically have a leg press machine, you'll have a hamstring curl and a leg extension, and then an abductor, which forcefully moves the legs out against resistance, and then an adductor, where you move in against resistance. So all of these things, when you're using weights and you want to maximize your leg development, especially the glutes, all those are necessary and desirable. You're going to want all of that because in each of those movements, let's take the leg press as the easiest example. You have relative contribution of muscle groups. If you have a pie chart and you say at this, you're somewhere in the middle of the range of motion. You say at this moment, what is the relative contribution of the glutes, of the quads, of the hamstrings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They'll each take a slice of the pie. And then as you go further out, it's more quad dominant. As you go further in, it's more glute dominant, hip dominant. And this continues in perpetuity until failure. And then at the end, you realize that no one muscle group worked at 100% of its capacity. So it is then required to address and stimulate that muscle group specifically later. So you do a leg press, and then we're doing the leg extension, then we're doing leg curl, then we do abductor, adductor, and you do all these things to most potently stimulate the target muscles, and you do need that if you want to maximize, you know, in that sense. And we can do that. And you don't need special hip thruster machines, and you don't need lunges, and you don't need, so there's so many things, but all you're accomplishing is the same exact thing already being accomplished. You need hip extension. That's what the glutes do. So we have hip extension in the leg press. You're welcome. So that's done. Got it. And then you need knee extension for the quads if you want that. You need for hamstrings. We have everything that addresses the muscle and joint function. All the hip thruster would do is, well, that's hip extension. Well, we're already doing that. So why would you double up? There's nothing that could be gained from doing both that's not already being accomplished in just the one. Then in the FastFit studios, it's a little bit different. You need even less. Even in just the regular old leg press, every single contributing muscle group, it's no longer the pie chart situation. Every single muscle group is going at 100% all the time. So you don't need to then go do specific things for the quads or for the glutes or for the hamstrings. In fact, in the one study from 2021 Western Colorado University, we've talked about it before, I think, where weightlifting group versus FastFit group, the FastFit group only had the FastFit Pro, which the only leg movement is a leg press, and that's it. Whereas the weightlifting group, they were doing a leg press with weights. They were doing leg extension and leg curl and calf raise. And the one rep max test and the five rep max test, at the end of 12 weeks, both groups improved because strength training works. But the improvement seen in the hamstring curl, for example, the leg flexion, the improvement was double in the FastFit group, which is weird. They were doing a leg press. We weren't even doing anything that did knee flexion. We weren't even working that head of the hamstrings that does that. But because of the nature of the resistance, it's so potent that every motor unit that could possibly be recruited is recruited right away. And the whole time, it was so potent that the improvement in a specifically hamstring dominant format that the weightlifting group had been practicing, even then, that wasn't enough to beat the FastFit group. So with FastFit, you don't need to be doing QVC 2AM devices and Thighmasters and Brazilian technology. You just need to be doing an honest effort at the leg press in the FastFit scenario, because then your hamstrings, your glutes will be working at maximum the whole time, extending at the hips and then resisting flexion. It's the most potent that you can get for that muscle group. And we could even do one leg at a time to max it out. You could do that if you really wanted that. So that's the difference between the two types of technology.
I love it. And it's worth mentioning some genetics go into play here, okay? So I think this is just like the ab conversation. Some people, when they're looking for this outcome, you know, more aesthetically pleasing glutes, absolutely, number one, we need to build up those muscles to get the larger muscle sizes, right? I want to have a nicer, bigger butt. If you're like myself and Jim Keen, we're cursed with... We already don't have to worry about the size of this.
I don't need any extra help.
Yeah, our genetics are that profile type. And so it goes right back to abs. If you want it to look more aesthetically pleasing, you've got to reduce the fat that's on the body.
Yep.
Just like the abs. If you look, you know, they have these classic scans, right? Underneath, if you take a picture of like four or five people and they all are of different size, right, and age, underneath that, you still have the same shape skeletal system, right?
Yeah, no one's big boned. We all have regular bones.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, and I have to be careful here because over time, I've come to appreciate more and more health is very different than what you see on Instagram or TikTok. Mm-hmm. And we can get body dysmorphia very quickly. We can create eating disorders very quickly. So if your goal is to be showing off more abs or to have a much tighter glute, I'm not saying that that's a bad goal. I'm saying that's different and independent from health, okay? Right. And so if it is your goal, then we have to talk about reducing the body fat percentage. But there's always two sides of the coin. If you get your body fat percentage too low, in fact, low enough that people will go, wow, now you look like a Marvel character. You're sacrificing things like hormone health, energy. That's not for today's episode, but it's not like that's the ultimate picture of health, right? The ultimate picture of health would be a female or a male, for example, that is anywhere from 15 to 21 or 22% body fat. At 20% body fat as a male, you're not going to have shredded abs and a perfectly defined glute, you know, if you're walking around in a Speedo, for example. And that might not be as aesthetically pleasing, you know, pleasing as the images that are on Instagram all the time. But there's a good argument that that person's much more healthy. And at the same time, if this goal is important to you, fantastic. We've got the tools. We've got the systems
right.
that we can put in place to help you achieve those goals. And they will include both working that muscle, specifically in the glutes, which is different than the abdominal conversation, and coming up with some good systems around nutrition to reduce your body fat.
And there's also people suffering from survivor bias. A great example of this, I think it was in Body by Science when Doug McGruff was talking about, and I've experienced this in my own life, but it's a swim meet and it's like a college swim meet. And you get there early and it's a full day thing because there's several rounds. And the first round, you look across at all the on the blocks and there's tall people, short people, big stocky people, thin people, Michael Phelps clone looking people. And they all have been doing the same training. Same exact training, same laps in the pool, same butterfly stroke, same freestyle, same, everything. But they have all these different body types. Now, at the end of the first heat, you go to the second round. And the second round, you notice that it's not quite as diverse. Now, everyone's pretty tall. Everyone's pretty thin, long limbs. And this continues, this process of unnatural selection through mm-hmm. competition. By the time the final round hits, everyone looks identical. And it's all the tall, lanky, Michael Phelps-looking people. And it's not that there is a type of exercise or training that has produced a body type. It is instead the truth that a body type has emerged that is the best suited for this activity. Same thing happened when I was on the road playing trumpet in like Broadway-style shows. I would invite friends in various towns to come out and see my show. Invariably, after the show, we'd meet up and hang out, and some of the girls would say, the women in your show, the actresses and the dancers, they look amazing. They look amazing. I'm going to start, and they would say yoga. They would say, bar dance mm-hmm. class, all these dance type. I'm going to take up swing dance. I'm going to take up salsa. I'm going to start dancing so that I can look like those women. But the problem was, they don't understand that these women were just the survivors from the audition process. There's 300 women in Manhattan showing up to a casting call for this tour that only has 9 positions open. And same deal with the swimmers. There's tall girls, short girls, bigger girls, smaller girls. Every single body type showed up. They've all been doing the same dance training, the same Pilates, the same yoga, the same swing lessons, same, everything. And then over the course of the audition process, 9 of them who look very alike, they're like clones, that's the look that has emerged that's best suited for this tour.
Right.
And then they get out in public and my friends go, oh, their training they do must produce that body type. Not the case at all. Because there's so many people doing that training who didn't produce that body type, completely different body type. What you're seeing is a misunderstanding of cause and effect and a survivorship bias. So when you look on Instagram and you see the woman with the butt that you want, mm-hmm. and then you go, oh, here are the exercises she's doing. I should be doing all these different exercises in order to look like that. What you're seeing is a survivor bias. It's not that she looks like that because she's doing this angle of Bulgarian split squat with the toe out. It's not because she's doing this type of sumo deadlift. She could get the same or better result just from going to a perfect workout and doing a leg press and a leg extension and curl, adductor, abductor, and being done with it. Mm-hmm. She would get the same exact benefit and then going to FastFit and just doing the leg press, maybe torso extension and right leg, left leg, and then calling it a day.
Right.
And she would save money. She would risk injury a lot less, but it wouldn't look as great on an Instagram story. So just realize that what you're looking, and the dudes with the abs, oh, that's what I need to do to get abs. Not necessarily. There's so many people who did those movements and didn't get the butt that that girl has. There's so many people who did all those same exercises, didn't get the abs that this guy has. So it's a survivorship bias. What you see is very influential. What you don't see is the thousands of people who have tried that and failed. And why would they post a video?
Right.
They failed. They don't look good.
Yeah.
So why would they say, I tried this and it didn't work? Which is another problem with peer review. Negative results are often not published. Because why would they? I didn't make any breakthroughs. It didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great data too. That's negative data. That's we need that. We tried this and it didn't have any effect. And that you never see it. You never see it get published. So these are some of the things you have to overcome. When you come into a perfect workout and you go, I need to do inner thigh and outer thigh and a different angle for each one of my quads. And I need to do for the teardrop and for the glute medius and glute maximus and pectoralis major and pectoralis minor. Mm-hmm. No, actually you don't. you're in luck. It can be way easier. You just need to stop thinking from that perspective of cause and effect.
So this is a freeing thing. I mean, I'm a little bummed. I won't get taller.
Right. No matter how many basketballs you dribble,
I'm not gonna.
You'll never get taller. Yeah.
But it's still a freeing message.
But the tallest people are great at dribbling it, so maybe there's a connection.
Yeah.
Maybe I could dribble and get taller. Maybe.
Yeah. Absolutely. Which kind of a little bit ties into this sort of final question, and I want to then get into a topic that's related and important. But this final question around training intensity.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of members, whether they're new or they've been with us for some time and then they stop training with us, sometimes it goes back to like the soreness episode that we have. Sometimes it's like, hey, this intensity is too much.
Right.
And they're doing the same thing as the guy next to them that's saying this intensity is not enough.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to work for me. And the truth is, in both of our studios and across our methodology, we have sort of different levels of intensity at the same that can bring people to the same results, you know? And some of it is just a matter of preference, like the soreness conversation. So this is probably a little bit of a shorter answer, but kind of can you get into the like sort of when somebody's looking at something and saying this is not intense enough or this is too intense and therefore it's not working, how do we approach that at the perfect workout?
The way we do it is the default is an intense workout just because that's the best. But that's not necessary for the production of continued results. It's like a bullet train. Yeah, the fastest way to get there is to go at maximum speed, you know, 400 or 500 miles per hour or whatever it is. But I don't know. I don't like to go this fast, so I'm just not going to take the train. Well, no, wait a minute. We also go 100 miles an hour. We could go 2 miles an hour. Any speed is possible. It's like you wouldn't be scared of a Ferrari assuming it only goes at its top speed.
Mm.
That would be crazy. You can also drive it 30 miles an hour to the market and back. So with our workouts, yes, it can be very intense and it should be for the most rapid production of results, but it doesn't have to be. So long as certain things are accomplished, you can still make progress. And it's like the systems versus goals thing. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. So just being directionally accurate, that's a success. You're doing great. So in the Nautilus studio, when we purposely underload you because you're cautious, because you don't want to work so hard and be so intense, can I still get strength training? I don't want to go at my maximum and look like those other people doing it and breathing hard. I don't want to do that, but I still want strength training. Do you have something for me? Yeah. Yeah. Easily. Right away. Instantly. With no problem. Even a little bit. I don't even know what you're worried about. It's just weights. We could just choose less weight. And as long as you're doing heavier weights over time and you're doing more tonnage in the same space of time, now compared to 3 months ago, compared to 6 months ago, congratulations, you're doing strength training.
Right.
You're getting every benefit possible from strength training. And eventually, I promise, it'll get heavy because that's just how progression works. And with the FastFit studios, it's the same way. You can produce a maximum of 2,500, 3,000 pounds, whatever the machines are rated for, or you could produce a single pound of force and the machine would give you a single pound of force instantly. Mm-hmm. So whatever the level is at which you would like to work, we can accommodate that.
Yeah.
All that we need from you is increase in the resistance over time, the amount of force you're made to produce, and the amount of work that you're doing, the tonnage you're doing in that discrete specific amount of time compared to 3 months prior, 6 months prior, 9 months prior. As long as we have those two, go as hard as you like. I don't care.
Yeah. If you want to learn more about that, we did an episode prior, Progressive Overload,
yep,
might be the title. So we get into that much more deeply. And like you alluded to, please just talk to your trainers. There are ways to make the exercise less intense. And there are ways, and this is not necessary, to make it more intense. We have trainers that, if we have time, we'll do those drop sets with members. We'll do those intensity extenders, like pushing beyond failure, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Your trainer will work with you. We've talked about this earlier, your different bio, psycho, social needs. They will work with you to figure out what works best for you and what you really enjoy doing.
Right.
And they'll customize their program to it. And you already alluded that we're going to wrap this up. You already alluded to this and you got a story around this and in your own personal experience. That same topic comes into, well, I wasn't able to do this 2 times a week or 3 times a week or 1 time a week consistently, or I'm going to be traveling and I'm going to be out for 2 weeks and then I'll be back for a week. And then I'll be out for 2 more weeks and I'll be back for a week. So what I'm going to do is just put my membership on pause and take a break from this because I can't do it right. So therefore, and it goes right back to this all or nothing mentality.
Right.
And that kind of ties into what we just talked about with the intensity piece. So yeah, why don't you tell your story around this and bring it home to like episode 2 or 3, why adherence is king.
Right.
But adherence can mean a little bit of variability in your consistency.
And yet again, half of a sure thing is better than twice a nothing. Yeah, I want to show up 2 times, 3 times per week, and that's the perfect workout. That's the thing. And if I can't do that, then I'm better off just quitting. And it turns out, no, half of a sure thing is better than twice a nothing. You get some benefit. Now, some is better than none. And your choices before were all or none. Mm. And so you can't do all because you're traveling or you hurt yourself or whatever happens. And so you're going to choose none. But some is on the table. That's an option. Some is good. And so in my personal story, it'd be my parents. Up in Chicago, they have access to a place that has this type of technology, the isokinetic technology. And they show up once every 14 days to this place. And they do their leg press and their chest press and their row and a couple other things. And it's been like that since 2017. So it's been 8 years, showing up 25 times a year, basically. And it was schedule, it was budget, it was several different reasons.
Were you training more frequently before that? Were they training?
They were doing like twice per week, and then it was once per week. And then finally they had the same conversation. Well, do we like quit? Because what, twice per month? Is that even doing anything? And I was able to convince them, listen, you've been strength training like this for 6-7 years. So this will help you maintain that cruising altitude. And my dad was born in 48. My mom was born in 50. And so they're getting into their 70s. And I said, well, just maintain into your 70s. You'll be way ahead of the game. What I didn't realize was how potent this stuff really is, because I keep checking in on their data, on their the fast fit machines they have there. And they're still getting stronger. They show up. It's less than an hour of exercise per month, and they're completely avoiding the bone and muscle loss associated with aging. Now, they're not going to be on any magazine covers. They're not losing fat rapidly. They're not building muscle rapidly. They're not doing the things that we would expect to see from a twice or three times per week protocol. However, if you cannot stick with your twice or three times per week protocol, it still behooves you to show up, I don't know, every other week. Like, why wouldn't you do that? You can still maintain what you've built. And the question is not, do I want to continue on this pace? And if I can't, I'm going to quit. The question is, do I want to slowly lose all the things that I built? I spent the money. I spent the time. I expended all these resources to get this benefit. And now if I quit, I'm going to lose it all.
Yeah.
Do you want that? Or do you want to show up, I don't know, a couple times a month until your schedule clears up and you can get back and make more quick progress. So that's the story about small hinges swing big doors. It's like, yes, even that little is still a huge change to someone's life.
So same thing on this fourth and sort of final question, all or nothing. Should I just take some time off? If you're new to our podcast and you didn't get the earlier episodes on adherence, on plateaus, check those out, because we go a lot deeper here and you'll get even more specific answers on these things. But yeah, that was fun. Today was different. I like the Q&A.
It's cool.
Kind of bouncing around. It's great.
Yeah. Good questions too, everybody.
Yes. Continue to put your questions in the comments. You can reply to the email that gets sent from me. I get those directly, and we'll continue to bring those to these conversations. That's the stuff that we really want to go over.
Yeah. And don't be shy. Your question just typed into the comments. We could talk about that on a future episode. So you might be featured if you just pop those questions in. So happy to do it.
So cool. All right, Jim. I'll see you next time.
Next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Perfect Workout Podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at theperfectworkout.com for more resources, or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make fitness simple, empowering, and a part of life well lived. See you next time.